folks. Welcome to the show. Hope you guys are having a great week. This week I have a good episode with Timber Cleghorn. Now, if you're a fan of the History Channel's show Alone, probably recognize that name. He was on the most recent season that's now available on streaming services. And a really cool guy with a very colorful background. As he describes it, he grew up in a extremist cult, learning about, you know, doomsday prep and weapons training, and, you know, completely, truly off grid, extremely unique upbringing. And then he dove right into missions and humanitarian work all across the world, you know, after he kind of recovered from some of the trauma of his upbringing. But super interesting guy. He was one of the few people on Alone who actually successfully hunted a huge bull moose with a recurve bow, and was an amazing contestant on the show. So if you haven't seen Alone, it's a really cool show where they basically drop off 10 folks in the wilderness completely alone. They have to self-film everything, and it's just last-minute. So Umber didn't quite win. He was the runner-up. We get into, like, he was very successful on the show, and he just sounded like a really, really interesting, cool guy that I wanted to talk to. So I got him on the podcast. I really hope you guys will enjoy it and share it with friends and family. I did want to mention a couple things. First, you know, this week, you know, came across a verse I wanted to share that maybe somebody out there needs to hear. Sometimes this time of year, I get a little out or anxious about, bringing in enough finances to provide for the family, continue doing what I'm doing. So, nobody's got it easy out there. We all have to work. And same goes for me. You know, it may seem like I'm rocking and doing really well, and I am. I'm doing well. God's blessed project in this show, but at the same time, I got to work really hard for what I get support wise, and it's not easy. But I was reminded this week that the Lord is where our is where our strength comes. He's our provider. It's easy to get anxious when you're looking to other man or companies, your source, your living, your income, all that stuff. But in the end, you know, it's really God who's our source. And I was reminded of this church last week, prayed actually Philippians 1:6, which is being confident of, you know, who began it in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ. So whatever it is, you know, if you're walking in step with the Lord, if you're walking in your purpose, what you're supposed to be doing, if it's a dream that God put on your heart, he's not going to abandon you. Yes, hard. Yes, there's times of stress, but stay connected to him, and he will continue to do that good work and carry it on to completion. So I'm believing on that. I'm standing on that. In the meantime, appreciate your support. Subscribe to the channel. Follow along on Instagram. Share the show and the YouTube channel with friends and family. That's the best way you can support me. And also supporting the partners that come alongside me and support what I'm doing financially. Right now, I just want to give a shout out to Canis Athlete. Great clothing company. If you're in the market hunting apparel, now's the time of year to kind of start that stuff. So go to canisathlete.com, use the code QUEST. You will not be disappointed. Try a pair of pants, maybe a jacket. I got a full 1 year in-depth review of everything that I've been using for my whole layering system for a year now. That's going to drop on YouTube this week. So be on the lookout for that. If you want an in-depth review and really detailed overview of all the pieces and where to start, go to my YouTube channel, hit the subscribe button, notifications for that 1 year Canis Athlete review. And you can use the code QUEST and you'll save some money a piece. I promise you won't be disappointed. And you'll help me out by using that code. I want to say thanks to Everly Stock. They're a great partner. They have some all-pack systems coming out. I also have a review video of my full Everly Stock system coming out in the next couple weeks. But they have some new products in the hunt side that I can't go into detail on. But game changers as far as the lineup at Everly Stock in the hunting space. They'll be coming out this July, possibly August. Be on the lookout for those. If you are in the market for a new pack, really encourage to hold off until Eberly Stock comes out with these new things, because I've only tried these new products and they are amazing. Huge improvements to the Eberly lineup. So in the meantime, or if you're hearing this, go to eberlystock.com/huntersquest. You'll see all the stuff I use and recommend over there. Great stuff, on the military, law enforcement, EDC things. Just picked up a Fade Flex fanny pack for my pack. It's amazing. And some awesome stuff coming this summer on the hunting side. So go to eberlystock.com/huntersquest and be on the lookout for that Canis Athlete and that Eberly Stock full system 1 year review video coming out soon on my YouTube channel if you want to get some more on those. Also want to say thanks to Browning Firearms and Leupold. Having a great time getting Bolt 2 carbon fed up and dialed in. Looking forward to hunting with that this season. Also, Onyx Hunt and Seek Outside. If you guys want to get some great stuff, use that code QUEST. So they got some new shelters coming out, the Cimarron 2.0. It's kind of my go-to lightweight TP. That I just love that shelter. So. Anyway, guys, I want to thank the rest of my partners as well. Thank you for your support. So let's just jump right in here to this episode with Timber Cleghorn. Hope you guys enjoy. Thanks. All right, everybody, welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. This is your host, Hunter McWaters. It's great to be with you. And today I got a treat for you. If you're a fan of the History Channel show Alone, as me and my wife are, I have a recent contestant, almost winner, Timber Cleghorn. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. It's good to meet you, man.
Yeah, you too, man. I said almost winner. I kind of feel bad because, I don't know, I don't feel like you lost. Like, you did amazing on the show, so it was really cool to watch you. We thought you were gonna win, but hey, God had other plans, so it's all good though.
I thought I was too. I appreciate that though. I do. I don't want to take any credit away from the man who was out there 84 days. I was out there only 83, so I don't want to take any credit away from him. But I also felt like I won certain victories, and it was one of the most blessed times in my life. So.
Yeah, man. So I definitely want to jump in and like talk more about that. But I also just want to kind of get to know you a little bit more and like your story. Like I said, it seemed like pretty interesting. And they, you only could get to know each contestant like a little bit because there's obviously starting off, there's 10. And so, you just get little snippets of your story and stuff like that. But I instantly kind of like liked you because you were like super articulate. Obviously not trying to give anything away, but you freaking shot a moose, which is awesome. not many people have done that on the show. I want to hear a little bit about how you grew up, because that sounds pretty interesting, and how you got to be who you are today. So, no detail, like you can't give me too much detail. I want to hear all about it. So yeah, start me from the beginning.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. And I just, thanks for this opportunity at the first place. But, the details about me growing up, it's something that I do censor a little bit, simply out of a desire not to really hurt people that were, like, for example, my parents, I don't want to hurt people overly much. So I am careful a little bit about how I approach it, but what I've said on the TV show was part, a good way to begin. And then I've got the book that I put out after that. I really struggle with how deep to go into this story, and I kind of drew a personal line for myself, so I want to go all the way up to that line, but I don't really want to injure anybody, there's people when you're part of a kind of a anti-government cult, a religious anti-government extremist, cult, there's people that you could really injure if you're not careful, And even though, I just want to keep it above injuring, especially my parents and a few other parents that were involved in that group. So yeah, my, um, Well,
And it's
I've come from a
interesting that
deep.
you do go so far as to say extremist cult. I mean, those are strong words.
Yeah, it is, and that already would probably disappoint or hurt some people to hear. But you know, it is what there's no other way to talk about it, is what I've concluded. There's no other way to really dance around the issue. So,
Okay.
I've come from a deeply religious background, you know, and then later in my teenage years and early 20s, I'm like, you know, kind of hated religion for it. But I come to find out that you can't hate God for it. You know, people do all sorts of things in
Yeah.
religion, but you can't hate God. God doesn't come down and hurt anybody with his big trip hammer, you know. That's pretty much religious groups that do that. So I grew up in a group that was like deeply religious, but took it into a way of, I would describe it just into fear, you know. And we're talking about in the mid-80s, early and mid-80s, looking at things like Waco, Texas, with the Branch Davidian and the big disaster down there, as the government kind of really mishandled a couple situations in those years, and it ended up in some big loss of life. Waco, Texas, Ruby Ridge, you know, John Weaver, and you know, those shootings. And they were, so we're talking about people who looked around and saw that happening, and they're like, "Oh, the next move is that we're all going to be rounded up and gassed in gas chambers, you know, where our children are going to be all taken and experimented on." So, you know, they just responded by going underground and becoming really militant in order to resist this. So, I mean, we're talking about people who just went off grid completely. So I grew up completely off grid, no electricity, running water, no power tools. Anything we did by hand, you know. So I'm talking growing corn, enough corn to get by through the winter. Me and my two brothers, we would hoe a field of 5 acres of a field, you know, regularly through the summer with just hose. We'd work that ground with just hose, you know. And so we're talking like hard work for survival, you know, to make ends meet, you know, hunting food for survival, but also, you know, just working the ground with hand tools. And
I feel like
it was
people are always like, "Oh, I'd love to be off grid," and don't realize like how insanely hard that is.
You know, I think what shocked people is learning how dependent the modern off-grid look still is. You know, we could talk about that forever, because I have a deep look at what off-grid living really looks like in like a medieval sort of way, you know. But modern off-gridders, you know, I think it'd shock people how much we still get from the products, you know, and services from the modern world. We're still dependent a lot of ways, because you're right, when you really go off grid, it's hard work. There's a reason people died in their 40s, you know, in medieval times. And part of it's just the work. So, you know, I remember leaving home and people being like, "Let's play football." And I'm like, "What is that? I have no idea how to play football or baseball or basketball or anything, because I mean, I've never done that, but I can freaking cut wood, you know."
That's
So,
cool, man.
but in addition, we're talking like training as well, not just working off grid living, but like fight, like a resistance fighter type training. You know, let's talk about like if you can imagine. I think this is a look people understand, like a modern Taliban or Al Qaeda training camp out in the middle of nowhere, and like what they do there to teach their young people both indoctrination and like weapons and insurgency type fighting. That's what we did, man. I mean, it's what we did. And so there's a lot of fear. I think I would just describe the whole thing by being like fear. You know, I remember occasionally seeing a cop, a police vehicle on a road, you know, that we were way off road, but you know, we'd get out there and I'd see a police vehicle occasionally come down the road, and I would just pray to God that that guy would die before he shot us all, you know.
Oh wow. I mean, it was
And
really
that poor police.
indoctrinated in you that like the government was really one to kill you and hurt you.
Oh yeah. So like for me and my younger siblings, we just had nightmares every night that a SWAT team was crashing through the door, and you know, because these are the drills that we did in life, and you know, and just like murdering everybody over the age of 10, you know, and like stealing all the younger kids. So, I mean, it was just that kind of a group, you know, and that's where I grew up, and that's kind of where I became me in a way, you know. But then, I don't know. I mean, you want any particular part there that you want more fully answered, or is that kind of a broad brush picture?
No, yeah, I mean, that's pretty crazy, man. Was it were you guys in Idaho, or do you feel comfortable saying?
I was actually in Indiana. There was a the group that we were associated with was kind of all over the place, not real it wasn't just everybody living in one spot, you know. So there
Yeah.
are people all over the nation, you know. But I grew up in Indiana.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things you said there jump out. I mean, first and foremost, that, obviously you grew up in a very extreme situation, but a lot of people do get hurt, traumatized in many ways by religion and the church, and then they write off God, And I think you hit it on the head, which is that church hurt, that whatever that trauma. That's humans, and humans are humans, and humans hurt people. Humans make mistakes. The church is a human organization. It's flawed. But you got to be able to draw that line between flawed human organizations and the true God, which, God is love and all these good things for, and uses bad situations for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose. So that's awesome, man. And, in a smaller scale sense, I kind of know sort of what you're talking about with the fear, me being the type of person I am, I at one point in my life kind of started down that road of like, the prepper thing and yeah, I think you do need to be ready and you do need to be, prepared to protect yourself and your family. I heard of something the other day. From this guy at Uncharted Supply, he was saying 95% of emergency survival situations are resolved within like 72 hours or something. So like, you can cover yourself for most of it without being like 3 days ready. And I have about like a month worth of stuff, like if stuff really goes bad, like food and water and stuff. But all I'm trying to say is like, it's especially for guys like me who I'm a very extreme person, I'm very much all or nothing, like you can go down, like start down that path, and I can see how people end up where you guys ended up. If you don't put a check on it, and you got to realize at the end of the day, like, okay, hold on a second. Like, am I putting my faith in God here as my protector, my provider, like my strength, my fortress, or am I putting my faith in this giant pile of food I have in my basement and this bunker or whatever? So you got to really like be prepared to an extent, but have balance and not live in fear.
You just nailed it, bro. You really just nailed it because I mean, I'm into prepping. You know, I really am. I for there were a decade or so of my life that I was against preppers because I was still getting over, you know, I
The
was coloring
trauma.
it all with the mentality of like, well, if you're a prepper at all, you're like an extremist, like my group, and you do this and that. But that's not true. I'm really into prepping. The need for it is great. We ought to be self-sufficient. But you're exactly right about like, well, where's your trust at the end of the day? Because if your trust is in a pile of food, I mean, that's got an expiration date on it. And then are you going to be happy? You're going to be filled with fear. It's about how we approach our life. And you said a lot of people have hurt and trauma because of religion. And you're so true. That's so true. And I think that's a lot of the story of Alone for me, my season of Alone. It was a lot of the fallout discussion for me after Alone, because a lot of folks, a lot of atheists, a lot of people hurt by church started to discuss things with me. And at first, you know, they're really against me because they heard that I'm a Christian, you know, they heard that I'm a follower of Jesus, and I say that on the show. And then after talking, they're like, oh, well, you're like us. You were so hurt by religion also that you nearly killed yourself. And that's true. I nearly took my life when I was a middle teenager. I think that it doesn't happen for people to see that God is good until you hear directly from God, if I could say it that way, like until you yourself experience the goodness of God. Because just through the words of people, you're just going to hear so much noise. I mean, just through the words of churches, you're just going to hear so much noise. And a lot of it is things that hurt people. A lot of it are things that are supposed to be positive. But it's hard to sort through that noise. But when a person themselves comes and brushes against the Creator, you know, and then you're stimulated by that life and you understand that it's good. I hope I'm not just going too far, but bro, I
No.
mean, I think that's how I describe it. I mean, people have to have their very own knowledge base that the Creator is good and loves what he
100%.
made.
Yeah. I mean, that's why Jesus came, right? So we can have that one-on-one personal relationship with God and not have to go through an intermediary like a priest or and that's where a lot of cults come from is some guy says, "Hey, you need me to get to God. You got to come through me, you got to do what I say." And so
Yeah,
that's,
gatekeeping, you know,
yep.
gatekeeping at eternal life. There's a lot of gatekeepers there, and you know, and they'll turn so many people away.
That's why when
Yeah.
I, I didn't grow up in a cult. I grew up in Southern Baptist Church, which I did
Yeah.
not agree with some of the stuff they teach, but a lot of well-meaning people, but like I had to, a lot of the stuff I was taught didn't make sense to me, didn't work from my perspective, with a scientific, natural kind of mind. And I had to say, okay, you know what? Like, I am just trash canning everything I was like learned in Sunday school. I'm gonna go straight to the red letter words Jesus said in the Bible, straight to the source, not filtered through any person, and then just go from there. I'll make my own decision. And that did ultimately lead me back to the truth.
Yeah, that's beautiful because that really mirrors even my family's, my wife and I, we were just talking about that this morning, how so many of the pictures that get painted in Sunday school, oh, well, hell is this way and the pearly gates are this way, you know. It's made up pictures. But what did Jesus say? What is the one person who I believe saw the afterlife and came to say something about it? Oh, he has my ears fully. He has my ears, you know. So I'll listen to that and then just let it be what it is in quietness, you know.
Yep, for sure, man.
Yeah.
So I guess what would be, just digging in a little bit more if you're comfortable, what, so I get the whole like, prepping, training, kind of anti-government time. I get, what would make you classify that group as a cult?
Well, the religious aspect of it really comes in, you know, and in any religious aspect, any religious group, there's things that are said that are true. I mean, people talked about Jesus, but at the end of the day, they didn't believe in a God like I believe in that actually loves the creation of his hands and wants to see it all, you know, transformed positively. You know, basically it's the religious aspect of it, I think, is what kind of shifts things into a cult, because then, you know, if you it was really, really that fear aspect really brought religion in right there. And anybody who would argue or question any principle that would be stand on, I mean, you're an outcast, ostracized, we try to, you know, to destroy every aspect of your life, economically, success, you know, and it was one of those things that people became so afraid to leave that several of the children that I grew up with killed themselves, you know, because
Wow.
the fear of leaving it was so destructive, you know. And we know groups like this around the world, you know, it's not a new thing, but if the fear of leaving a group is that destructive that you, I mean, that you'll feel that people will actually kill you, you know, for leaving it, you know,
Wow.
or people will pray against your soul so that God will kill you for leaving it, you know. I think that borders into cult territory, but I mean,
For sure.
I'm not real, I don't insist on the definition of cult.
Right.
That's you know,
No, I get you.
yeah.
You've touched on it a couple times. So like what, like this suicide attempt thing, like what led you to that place, man?
You know, I think if someone's life is basically founded in fear, there's no boundary that can keep it back from total darkness. For me, it began to just be like, you know, there's no hope of anything better in life than one second. Are you hearing this audio? I hear the mailman just drove in with a new vehicle, and it's he
That's
can't stop it. He's crashing into the ditch right now. He's
right. Where do you live, man?
I'm out by Salem, Indiana,
Okay.
out in the sticks. So I just don't want to mess up your audio
No,
here.
you're
I
good.
mean, are we live, or are you going to be able to cut this?
I can, but I don't hear too much interference. You're good.
Oh, okay. All right. Maybe it's not picking it up, but
I
it's
can hear a little
overwhelmingly
bit.
loud, and he can't stop his vehicle. He's literally crashing. Okay, that's kind of cool. He's got a new Jeep that he's working on, evidently.
Okay. Is he all right?
Okay, I apologize about that interruption.
No
Yeah.
worries.
All right, so go back and hit the original question. How do you phrase that question?
I was just saying,
Well, the
like, how
suicide
did you
stuff.
get to that place, and I guess what got you out, or I and that would lead into how did you get out of this group and find, it seems like, a much more healthy, balanced place of life.
Yeah, man, that's quite a story there. So basically, at the worst, it got to the point where for about 3 years, I constantly thought that I'd kill myself. And it's basically like, if all of my life I'm going to just be in terror that God hates me, that God wants to kill me, you know, and that nothing in the world is good or beautiful, that we have to hide from everything, you know, and that if I can't be enough for God to deserve to breathe air, or for my parents to be able to have a good relationship, you know, I'd just rather not be part of this whole thing, you know?
Wow.
And so that's a kind of was a dark point to be at. And then it was interesting. I became angry instead of depressed eventually. And then, you know, I kind of got over the suicidal thoughts, because I'm like, you know, I'll just find my strength and power through anger, you know? And I think a lot of hurt people go to anger as the next step. That's for sure. Especially people hurt religiously or in relationships, they go to anger as the next step. So I did. And I was like, you know, I had one goal. I said, I'm going to just bide my time, and then I'm going to join the Marine Corps. I'm going to be against everything that my parents stood for in every way. I'm going to do everything I can to hurt people. I want to get into a position to hurt people, and I'll never be home again, you know? And I was waiting for that day. So I was just like waiting for that time that I could join the Marine Corps. And a trip opportunity came up for me. And this sounds weird. It was a mission trip, and it was presented through a church, you know, and a possibility came up, and they said, you know, who would like to go? And I heard about it. And in my mind, I'm like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I hate this stuff. You know, this is what's wrong, you know? And my hand flew up that I would want to go. And I
Where was
horrified.
The trip to?
It was to Ukraine at the time. This was early 2000s. And it was a trip to go and help orphanages in Ukraine. And so my hand flies up, and I didn't want it to be up. And I tried to pull it down for a minute, and I just couldn't pull my hand down.
Wow.
And so they wrote my name down publicly. And then I was too embarrassed to say I'd made a mistake.
Yeah.
So
have you processed since then, like, what it was that made your hand go up?
I just can't figure it out, man. I can't. I mean, something inside of me wanted a taste of life, and I didn't know it would be there, but God knew, I have no doubt. And something just pulled my hand straight up, and I have no answers at all. So I'm sitting there, and I try to pull it down, and then they wrote my name down, and I'm like, I literally went on the trip because I was embarrassed to say I'd made a mistake. So we're talking 5 weeks of
And you're
your
still
life.
Dealing with all the anger and wanting
Oh,
to,
yeah.
Yeah.
I was the most angry person you've ever met at that time. I wanted to hurt people, you know, just because, yeah, I thought that was a good release, you know. So I hurt people whenever I could, which thankfully wasn't much, because we didn't have many people around us. We were pretty isolated. Thank God, you know, because there is no telling, you know, where I would have went. But so I went to Ukraine, and I was with a group, you know, and we were working with orphanages, and going from orphanage to orphanage. And I, the main thing that got me, the first thing that got me, was in the eyes of those children, I saw exactly what I felt in my heart, that they're in their eyes. They didn't have any light, so to speak. And basically I understand now that they didn't have much hope of something being different for them. They had almost no opportunity, and no one had ever told them that they were valuable, because they were just processed through, you know. I'm not going to knock any workers at those orphanages, because they were overworked, understaffed, and just overworked. And so it just worked out that not one of these kids had heard that they were something of value. And there was a void in their eyes. It looked like darkness. And I felt instantly connected to these kids. And I'm like, I know what they are inside. And that's what got my attention, because otherwise I was just like, I'm just here for the ride. This is all BS, you know. Those kids got my attention. And then I began to witness some strange little events. You know, one boy who was growing up in the orphanage, you know, and about to be released out into a world where he had no idea what to ever make of himself. And he said to one of the Christian workers, he said, "Why are you here doing this?" And they said, "Because," they said something along this line. They said, "Because God created you and he loves you. And I want to be here to show you that he does. You know, and that kid was stunned. And then the person quoted John 3:16, for God so loved the world, you know, he gave his only begotten son, you know. And they finished the verse, and that kid started bawling because he understood. And he said, I believe that, you know, and that something happened. Like I couldn't argue with it because you have to understand, like I'm a little atheist sitting there, you know.
Okay, you'd already kind of
And in
shut
that,
out, like shut off God's not real, like this is
oh yeah.
all.
Yeah, I hated the concept of God at the time. I believe I could say that. And in that kid's eyes, a light came on. And it was the light of hope, or of being valued, you know, by somebody. And it was a deep thing. You know, it wasn't just a fleeting moment where he was like, oh, you know, there's something positive in my day. It sounds good, and move on. It was something deep from his heart. And me spending my time staring into those children's eyes, I mean, it was huge. It was huge. And I saw that happen time after time as we went, and just the Christians were just tried to help people, you know, just were doing they were doing puppet shows for the kids, they were doing snacks, they were doing cool programs, and not getting anything out of it. And then it just stunned me. Just that's what brought me out of darkness, you know. I saw what happened in those kids' eyes in Ukraine, and I said, I just had a little talk with God for a moment, and I said, God, if that's real, I'll follow that light, you know. And then as days went by, I just started becoming convinced that it was real, you know. And I don't really have the words to describe how deep it was to see hopeless eyes like mine and to see some kind of light come on there. And it was only from Jesus, because Jesus, the words of Jesus said that you're valuable, you know. And I think that's what makes a difference, you know, in the world, is being nothing else says that every single creature, every single human being that God created has innate baseline value that cannot be taken away by slavery or trauma or cults or seemingly being owned by a group, one group or another. It can't be taken away. You're valuable because you're made by the hand of God. That really struck me, man. And I just said, if that's real, I want to go towards that. And then it was like something broke loose in me, you know. And I started enjoying what was going on. We just for 5 weeks we were working with orphanages, and then there came a day that I was exploring the woods there just between stops, and I found this old battlefield area from World War II. There was like slit trenches everywhere that were partly filled in, like shell holes and stuff. And I came upon a place where there was some mounds of dirt, and I went up on those mounds of dirt. The top was all caved in, sunken in, and then I read a stone on there that said, this is a mass grave from the civilians of the town that we were near. And it said 2,000 people under each mound of dirt. And I was shocked at that moment, because I had just begun to think that God valued humans, having made them. And then I saw that there's evil in this world, and it's people. It's perpetuated by people. It's from Satan, you know, but it's perpetuated by people. And I said to God at that moment, something that I forgot in years after that, I said, if you could use my life to stand in the gap for people like this, like under this dirt here, or for these orphans, I was like, you could just have everything that it is. And I think that's the moment I must have turned to God and got saved, as if we describe it that way. It must have been that moment, you know. And then I kind of forgot that in years afterwards, but it all came back to me when I was in Ukraine after the Russian invasion in 2022. It was full circle. It was, and I got to help evacuate that same the same orphanage that was the main one we stayed
No
with.
way.
It was awesome.
That's
It
wild,
was a
dude.
full circle moment, man. I was a gift. I was like, God heard those words that a dumb kid said all those years ago. That was so. That's kind of to your question about like what brought me out of all that stuff. Like why was I suicidal, and what kind of stopped all that, you know? And after that, every step was a not every step was in the right direction, but every step kind of trended towards the light as I followed. I was like, I'm a follower of Jesus. I'm going to follow his words because he loves people. You know, he values people. So
Wow, that's an amazing story, man. So, and that's super unique way of kind of getting saved. Like I never really heard a story like that where it's like you actually went out as a quote unquote missionary. You recognized something in those you came to help, a darkness that you shared, and you saw that darkness flee in the presence of light and love, and you was like, whoa, that's real. I want that. That's amazing, man.
That's the best way to sum it up, man. I mean,
Yeah.
that's exactly what happened.
That's really cool, man. So when you got back, I'm sure it wasn't like, all right, mom and dad, I'm a real Christian now. Later, like, what was the transition out into the real world? And, do you still have family back there and that kind of thing?
I've got no family left in that spot in Indiana where I grew up. There's nobody left living there. But you're right. When I came back from Ukraine, I mean, it wasn't all just roses, because I had built patterns in my life of hating, and being mean. And, we built these patterns and then we're up against the patterns, we gotta walk in the light to shake those things off. I was still up, the same relationship problems in a lot of ways at home. But right before I left home, see, I was in my upper teenage years. And when I turned 19, I was going to go to a linguistic program because I wanted to get back overseas and I wanted to be able to work with people that were underprivileged people, et cetera. So I had chosen a linguistic program.
So
I've
real
always
quick,
loved languages.
let me jump in real quick. So is that point, is that when you decided like you don't want to do the Marine Corps anymore, but now you're kind of surrendered your life to God and to helping folks overseas and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was the watershed thing. I thought, I could go ahead and join the Marine Corps, but I feel that there's something I could do that's better because I no longer just wanted to hurt people. I no longer wanted to just get into a position to hurt people and to make a statement, for hate, in my life. And I think I would not be the only one who's ever joined the Marine Corps for that reason. I've got a lot of Marine buddies, and I mean, we talk about this, and I would not be the only one who's ever joined for that reason. So it wouldn't be uncommon there. And I know that my life would have led to destruction going that way. So at that time, I was like, you know what? I need to do something else. But I still want to be overseas. I want to be in conflict zones and stuff like this. I was like, you know what? I'll be a linguist, and I can kind of. My hope was to be able to liaise between, well, not only U.S. forces but forces of any type and underprivileged populaces, And that was kind of a secret dream of mine there, and that did transpire, So but yeah, that's why I wanted to go to the linguistic program after leaving home, and I left home with $450 in my pocket, absolutely no knowledge of the outside world. I did not know how to order food at McDonald's when I left home, I just barely knew how to drive, and I had $450 in my pocket from selling coyote skins and a horse.
Wow. Was there like a moment where you're like, wow, the whole world is not evil? Yes, there's evil in it, but like, not every police officer wants to murder me. You're like, that was it kind of like a rebirth kind of thing?
Oh, bro, it was amazing. Like I went too far in the direction of believing that everybody was good at the
Yeah,
time because
for
it was
sure.
so different from what I was taught. And I met police officers as they pulled me over. And I had a vehicle full of guns when I left home. As you can imagine, I was prepared. So I had like just stashed rifles and pistols and everything
Yeah.
all through my
Because you're
vehicle.
still probably thinking, I don't know, like they might come after me as soon as I leave here, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I didn't know what was going to happen. I'm like, I might have to fight, if I go to college. I don't. So I had plenty, and police officers would pull me over and I'm like, and then they would just be decent people, and usually, and all the people at the school where I went, they weren't afraid. And that lack of fear was so intoxicating that I began, that was one of the best years of my life. And I thought the whole world was rosy and beautiful, and then, after that, reality kind of sets in. There's evil people everywhere, but
Sure.
you're like that introduction into the world was wild. It was one of the most exciting times ever, going across the country out to Texas to study linguistics with no money, a lot of guns, and just realizing that the world is a place to live. And a lot of people out here actually love God. It was true.
Were your parents or family angry that you were leaving or trying to keep you back, or were they happy, or what was that like?
No, at the time I had kind of worked out a truce. I'd worked out a relationship with my dad, and then I'd, he liked the idea of mission work, but I mean, I knew he wasn't going to like how I approached it in the future, because I wasn't going to preach this the type of God that he preached,
Right.
but they were we kind of were we kind of left on a decent footing,
Cool.
and it was good for a year or two.
Okay, you left that open-ended. Then what happened? It was
Oh
good for
no,
a year or two.
then just, you know, just as I you know, started to get deeper into the type of work that I would want to do, you know, yeah, it was mission work, but it was also a lot of humanitarian aid work, and it was a lot of work, you know, trying to base in the foundation of love. Then we kind of didn't have a relationship anymore, you know, with
Okay.
folks at home. Well, I'll just leave it there. You know,
Yeah.
it's just one of those things, you know.
Yeah. Guys, whether you are into PRS or if you're military or law enforcement or like me, a backcountry hunter, Eberle Stock has got you covered, guys. I use their backpacks for my EDC to carry on the airplanes when I'm going on trips. I use their duffel bags and their roller bags for going to the range and for packing for long trips. I use their backpacks for backcountry missions. I have personally packed out several mule deer, couple bears and at least one elk with my main frame, and it's an awesome hunting pack. They carry weight well, they're very durable, and Eberle Stock's always, you know, coming out with new stuff, innovating new products. Everything is modular. You can mix and match different accessories. And I gotta mention their bino pack also is literally my favorite bino pack I've ever run from any company, and I've tried pretty much all of them. So check out the show notes for this episode, and there's a link that'll take you to their website, but it's a curated list of all my favorite pieces that I use on all my out-of-state hunts, backcountry hunts, everything I do. Or you can just go to eberlestock.com/huntersquest. You may have heard me mention it before, but I'm really proud to announce that this year I started working with Browning Firearms and Ammunition. This year I am shooting the X-Bolt Speed 2 carbon fiber in 300 Win Mag, and it's one of the best shooting rifles I've ever owned. Super smooth action on it, great trigger, and the stock is completely adjustable. You can adjust the length of pull, the comb height, and even adjust from a sporter style grip to a more vertical style grip. So it's a really versatile gun, fit a lot of different shooters, and it's a great shooting gun. Browning has a full lineup of X-Bolt rifles in different stock options, barrel lengths and materials, and calibers. So go over to Browning.com and look at the full lineup of X-Bolt Speed 2 rifles, and I promise you won't be disappointed. I'm sorry, man. Well, I pray that hopefully that'll change one day. But okay, so you go to your linguistic school, and dude, just before we go any further, like I feel like we're sort of kindred spirits, which is probably one reason why I want to talk to you too, because obviously my life and upbringing was pretty different, but like I feel like I have a similar passion for international work and missions work and stuff. My first trip ever, like when I was 14, I did a homestay with a family in Japan.
Oh my goodness.
I wanted to go when I was 12. My parents were like, "No, you're too young." And so I've always had this like passion for overseas. And then I worked for an organization called the Christian Broadcasting Network, where we would do international humanitarian and disaster relief. Like we went to Nepal in 2010. I did Ecuador, Thailand, Cambodia, Syrian border, just all over the place. And I would document, the humanitarian efforts and stuff, and make TV pieces of it. So that's how I got trained how to make TV as well. So,
You're killing me here. I mean, like, we speak the same language then. I bet we know a lot of the same people. And how have we not
maybe.
crossed paths? This is awesome. And maybe
Yeah.
we will cross paths.
I hope so, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I've done stuff in Africa. So, were you in Nepal in 2010?
No, I was in Nepal later than that at some point. I didn't do any disaster relief in Nepal.
Okay.
I just went to visit some long-termers who were staying there, some friends of mine.
Gotcha.
Also linguist, and then I was busy at the time, both times when the major earthquakes happened in Kathmandu. I was involved in something else and couldn't go, but
Gotcha.
it's really cool that you went. I bet you saw a lot.
Yeah, man. It was the that was one of the coolest places I've ever been. The people were incredible. I had like I know you didn't grow up watching movies, so I don't know. Did you ever see Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom?
I have now. I
Okay.
mean, yeah.
So remember the moment where they go to the village and like they give him the food and the girl's like, "I don't want to eat it," and he's like, "Eat it. This is all they have." Remember that
Yeah.
part? Okay, so I had a moment like that. Like we went up like hours into this tiny village that had been like decimated by the earthquake, and they like brought us to this like hut and sat us down and gave us like this food, and it was like the spiciest thing I've ever eaten, dude. And like I do not like spicy food, and but I just like choked it down because I knew like they didn't have like anything, and they were giving us meat like chicken. And so anyway, yeah, I've had some incredible experiences. Thanks to God. So I just want to share that before we jump back into your story. But so yeah, so
That's incredible, man.
walk me through your journey from there.
I've bounced around to projects in a lot of different countries, a lot like you're describing. I've ended up in each country seeming to be like a crazier and crazier place. And kind of settled into a long-term project on the Tajikistan-Afghanistan border. We were doing helping some tribal groups with their language development. So, a lot of people don't understand that there's languages in the world that don't even have an alphabet, so there's no writing system, and those languages and people, they kind of suffer a complete loss of their culture and of their young people because of that, as the young people have to look elsewhere for opportunities. So, I mean, there's a lot to be done in helping, tribal folks work on their own languages so that they can have, the education models that they need and stuff like that. And then there's a lot of mission work to be done at the same time. So we settled into a kind of long-term project there, which was eventually interrupted in 2021 when the Taliban took back over Afghanistan. And that really brought about kind of a shift, because I've always been more passionate about the disaster relief and oppressed peoples and kind of emergency situations and stuff like that. I've always had more of a leaning that way, but there's not always opportunity for it. There's not always an emergency that you can go and meet. You got to settle in and be as constructive as you can. But when the Taliban started taking back over Afghanistan, I mean, a lot of my buddies came. I've got a lot of Marine buddies now, and a lot of them work for another relief group that specializes in just conflict zone frontline medical work. And we lived together on the Afghan border there for a while, just evacuating people in front of the Taliban's offensive, or trying to help people cross the river without getting killed, trying to do medical work and teaching and stuff. I mean, anything that we could possibly do for people, trying to help people evacuate, not even through Tajikistan only, but through, Pakistan and Qatar, UAE, and try to help people basically get away. And we're talking, some of them were American citizens. I know the immigration topic is a big hot button topic right now. I mean, but when you're face to face with somebody that's going to be killed, your heart is stirred, and you forget about the immigration topic for a minute, and you're like, we just need to help folks,
Absolutely.
And I wish that each American could be in that situation for a moment. I'm no, a moment enough to think it through, because, yeah, I mean, we need immigration reform, but we also, each one of us personally needs compassion,
For
and
sure.
love, from Christ, so you get these things as you've been face to face with it. So we kind of, my linguist work at that time kind of transitioned into what I had originally hoped and prayed years ago, is that liaisoning between, sometimes government forces and people, local people. And then the Russian invasion of Ukraine took place, and I was still working on the Afghanistan border, and the invasion of Ukraine took place, and a bunch of my Marine buddies said, if this happens, we're going to go try to do medical mission work on the front line of Ukraine and try to help people there. Will you come and interpret for us and help us, do logistics and interpret? And I prayed about that one, because I'm like, oh, if that happens, it's going to be big, and that's going to be scary, and it was big. But I prayed, and my wife, I literally left her in Tajikistan with the children working on that while I went to Ukraine when that happened. We were just split up doing different things, and that was tough. But she said, of course we go, of course you go, this is what we do, it's what our life is meant for. And I just really admired her for that. So then I went to Ukraine on the first day of the invasion on one condition. I told my buddies, I'm like, we're not just helping Ukrainians, right? We'd help anybody that we find. And they're like, of course, that's what Christians would do, So, I mean, no matter who you would find, Russian or Ukrainian, God wants people there that'll help anybody, and
For
so
sure.
we said that's what we'd do. So we went there, and just tried to set up casualty collection points and tried to work as close as possible to the front line with people that were streaming out from apartment complexes that had just been blown up and destroyed. Their children had just been killed in many cases. You know, I mean, it was wild. It was so wild. I remember at one point driving our lead vehicle in our ambulance convoy just through a huge pool of blood, you know, where bodies had been pulled out and loaded onto another truck, you know. And I just,
Jeez.
it was one of those moments that just felt so very like I'm in the right place, but this is so wrong. And then that orphanage called. They had heard that I was there, and they called and asked if we had come help them evacuate. And at that moment, it hit me that God had answered my prayer, and I'd forgotten about it. And I didn't even know
That's
what I meant
crazy.
at the time years ago when I was in Ukraine, and I prayed, God, use my life for people like this. But God heard that, and that was one of the biggest days in my life, one of the biggest gifts in my life, you know. So from that point, you know, like from the Taliban
You said you helped
reconquering
evacuate
Afghanistan.
that orphanage that you had visited so many years before.
Yeah,
That's amazing, dude.
yeah. I just thank God for that day, you know. But that's
So
kind of been
cool.
the look of life since, for the last few years, just that type of relief work slash mission work at conflict zone type stuff, you know. There's more conflict zones in the world than people would possibly imagine,
Oh,
from
yeah.
Myanmar and Southeast Asia, you know, India, Pakistan border, Syria, you know. You've seen some of these, you know. So there's
Yep.
more conflict than people know. And there's more orphans than people realize. And there's more families being just brutally murdered than people realize.
Yeah, I've been inside a Syrian refugee camp on the border, both like official government ones and just like enclaves of Syrian people, like in the Turkish countryside, like trying to make a living. I actually stuck a hidden camera into the government one. I don't know if I should say that publicly, but
If don't say that and then fly back through Turkey, you know, unless it was the old Syrian regime, which I guess has fallen. I get you're probably good if it was them.
yeah, no,
So
I don't think anybody would care at this point, but yeah, man, and actually it was, I mean, refugee camps are not great, but the government one actually was fairly well run and organized. The folks in the just impromptu, like living in a field in tents, they were way worse off actually. And it reminds me of something that like I feel like maybe somebody needs to hear who's listening to this podcast right now. Like for example, when we did that missions work in Turkey, we raised a small amount, but a decent chunk of change from like some local churches around here. My wife is Iranian American, and they had lived in Turkey for almost a decade, so they had connections with missionaries and different churches in Turkey. So we raised some money over here, and then we used their kind of local contacts to go into these. Like I was in a town, on the Syrian border. I'm talking about like 300 yards, I could see the Syrian border. And this is 2014, and we're white, blonde-haired American walking around after dark in this town, like super dangerous. The only reason that could have even happened is because like my father-in-law knew a guy whose like uncle was like the mayor of the town, and there were like these Turkish dudes like in black suits that all had handguns and like black SUVs. I'm pretty sure they were like mafia dudes just like protecting
bro.
us. But like, yeah, that was one of the wildest things I've ever done. But basically what I'm trying to get at is all we did was we put together like a kit of like, 2 or 3 gallons of oil, like a big bag of rice, big bag of flour, like 2 flats of eggs, just like enough for like 2 to 4 weeks of food. And it's like, and we would just deliver them to everybody we could. And some people may be like, okay, well, I mean, it's 2 weeks of food. They're still screwed or whatever. But like, you just, and I feel like that's the enemy. And that could be related to like anything in life is like, well, there's so much problem. There's so much hurt. Like, what can I do? Like, well, you can go and you can take 2 weeks of food or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's still helping. It's doing something. And looking back at like the, Jesus feeding the 5,000, the kid he brought is 2 loaves and fish. God multiplied it. Like, God asks that we bring what we have and do what we can, and He will multiply. He will take it from there. So, yes, you and I are not going to fix everybody in every war zone. But if you go, and I'm speaking to somebody out there, if you go and listen to God and do what you're supposed to do, God can multiply, and that's all he asks is that we just try and just go.
Yeah, you're right. It is discouraging when we can't figure out something that like either helps everybody or helps one person completely
Yeah.
forever. You know, but God doesn't always put in the power of our hand the ability to completely solve a situation, but to do one right thing. And like you're saying, I hope that some listeners to the podcast will pick that up, you know, and say, I can't do everything. So, but I can't, don't think that it's worthless to try. Do one right thing in a situation and then just take your hands off. If you can't do more, take your hands off and let go,
Yep.
you know, and maybe God takes it to the next step. Maybe nothing becomes of it, but do one right thing towards a situation and don't be hobbled just because we can't do the whole thing. You know, you're right about that, man.
Or maybe that one family just says, "Hey, this white dude came all the way from America to bring me some groceries or to patch up my kid's scraped knee that's getting infected." You know, and then maybe that leads them to God, you know. Maybe you'll see them in heaven one day
Yeah.
and they're like, "Dude, you came, that put me on a path that led to this, led to that, and I met the Lord and here we are," you know.
What surprises me is in our American world these days, the amount of grief that you'll get if you do this. Like let's say in your situation you go and you just give rice and flour and oil to a family and come back. After alone, people, a certain demographic dogpiled me on some online discussion about how arrogant that is to do that. Or, you know, why do you think that you're the answer to everybody's problems? Or you have white savior complex and mentality and all this kind of stuff. That surprises me because it's objectively a good thing to do. You know, say you give food to someone, you know, and you know that it's the right thing to do, but then people be like, you know, how dare you do that because you're elevating yourself to a level of arrogance that like you're the solution to people's problems. And it's like, I just want to say, well then come with me, you know, see
Yeah.
the people that we're talking with and see happiness come when they do know that they'll have food for a few days.
Yeah.
You know, just come with me and see if you still feel that way. Because there's no white savior complex in anybody, you know, that I know or that I rub shoulders with doing that. There's none. There's just I have the ability to do one thing today and we'll do it. We want to change our world a little
Yeah.
bit. A little
And
bit. You know, let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. God's will is obviously for things to be good. Let's make something good. You know, we're the hands of Jesus right here. Let's make something good. We're not the solution to all the problems, and we're not a white savior, but it just really surprises me how there's a strong current in our nation that's against these examples. You and I, you know, these examples we talk about, it bothers me where people's hearts are.
And on a human level, it does feel good to help people. Yeah, it feels
Yeah,
good. It's
yeah.
rewarding. But I believe God put that in us. Like, he made our brains to release endorphins when we see a smile on a kid's face, so we just gave him some food because that's a good thing.
Yeah,
Like, so,
it's objectively good.
yeah. And so, yeah, I'm sure there are people that maybe don't have their intentions right or whatever, but I mean, just like, you know, going back to feeding the 5,000, you know, Jesus, he fed them just for that one day, but
Yeah.
it was that right thing to do at that moment, you know, like,
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, man.
So anyway, you know, I guess doing this, all this cool stuff, what is it that like made you want to sign up to go on alone?
Okay. So, it was after my stint in the Ukraine invasion, and then I transitioned right into another country, which I don't want to mention the name of because I go back and forth there and still try to help. But in that country, the official government was brutally murdering a whole tribe, and by hundreds, and it's a place where I have a lot of really deep friends and close friends, you know, and it was our friends like suffering and being killed, you know, and we went there, and it was months like working there. And I, in that instant, I became so like just so worn out and so over it, you know, just surrounded by death is what I would say all the time. I mean, I know guys that hold up to it well. Some of my Marine buddies do, but at that time I found my limit of how much I hold up to it. At the time, I mean, our limits can grow, but at the time, I just hit the limit, and I was just sick, you know, just sick of everything. And I'm like, I need to spend some time at home. So I came back to the States actually, and with my family, and my kids were all very much on edge and torn up, and it just hurt me to see that the shape that my kids were in after all this, you know, because I've had my family with me on a lot of missions, but not right in the thick of anything dangerous happening. But they absorb that from you, you know. When they're anywhere close, they absorb that from you. And so my family, we all needed like a reprieve, you know, a reset. And so I came to the States and I'm just like, I don't even know what I'll do. I may never go back anywhere. Maybe never. And sitting there and I was just trying to get like groceries going the first few days. And one of my kids turned on, there was like a TV in the place you're staying. One of my kids turned on Alone. It was season 8. And I looked at that and I said, now is the time I'm going to do that. And I think inside of 10 minutes, I had written an email and applied. And I
Oh,
told my
nice.
wife, I was like, hey, I think I'll apply for a loan. And she's like, yeah, definitely go for it. And I just applied right then and just forgot about it for about 3 months. And then they got right back with me from this really chintzy email that I had sent. They just got right back with me and they're like, hey, let's talk. And then began the like 4 month long or however casting process. It's pretty long casting process. A lot of work there, and that began then. But that's what brought me to the point of getting on a loan. Is I'm like, you know what? I'm not myself. I'm not sure what we're gonna do in this world. Well, then I'm gonna apply for a loan, and we'll let it sort itself out. And so that's how I got on the show.
That's cool, man. And if people haven't watched it, it's a great season. You did awesome. You freaking shot a
Well, thanks, man.
huge bull with a recurve bow.
I appreciate that.
That was crazy, man. I guess I don't want to spend too much time talking about the show because people can watch the show, and I like really like hearing a lot, like more about you. But I don't know, what was the hardest part of that experience?
The hardest part physically was preserving the moose, because you're a big game hunter. You know, like if the weather just snaps warmer after you get big game on the ground, you're in trouble, you know. And previous people who've killed big game, I think two people have killed big game previously on the show. It's been pretty chilly, and they just, you know, hang the meat up, you know, and the meat stays good. Well, for me, it was going to spoil, you know. It warmed up on the day I killed that moose. And the most brutally hard thing physically was just preserving that moose, trying to build out my gigantic smoker shelter, you know, and the type of materials that I had to work with in that Mackenzie Delta area, pretty crappy. Not a lot of moss to chink, you know, your logs with, and to try to get something smoke tight so that you can smoke, you know, meat and stuff that in that big of a quantity. So that took me a week, and I lost condition doing that, because I barely ate during that week. I'm like, you know what? If I kill this moose and I lose the meat on national TV, I mean, that'd be hard for viewers. It'd be hard to live down. And so I'm like, I don't even care if I die or lose. I can't lose this meat. So I barely ate and for a week, and that was the hardest thing physically. Otherwise, it's not that hard physically. You know, survival is it's kind of my thing.
That's
I
your
love
thing,
it, and I was relaxing at it actually, mostly.
Yeah, you seem pretty like you're having a good time. You
I
actually
was
did some
having a
really
good time.
funny little skits and stuff.
Though I started having a good time after I got the moose smoked, because it took about that long for me to basically soak into the silence and let God speak to me and start like renewing my heart. Up to that point, I was still pretty much a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress and stuff like that. But then I started having, you know, just creative ideas and skits and fun and all that, all the way up to the end, man. You know, I was just having the time of my life. But the hardest thing mentally is silence. You know, it can't really be showed on the show. You know, being away from your family is tied to this. It was harder than I thought, because I've been away from my family a lot in war zones and stuff. But you can call occasionally, and the silence there. But just the physical silence as the Arctic shuts down for the winter. On about day 30, it shut down. Animals were gone. Birds were nothing was left. And then you're looking at months still of total silence. Like as the snow comes, it's silence that can hardly be comprehended. Just absolute absence of the earth living or breathing, you know. And your only thing you can listen to is your head. And that was tough, man. I mean, that's pretty tough.
I mean, humans are
So.
designed for social interaction, and you can actually like get like brain injuries from seclusion.
I've read about that since then. I've read, and I'm like, oh, you know, and I'm like, that bears my wife's theory out that I actually went a little crazy.
You do, man. I mean, That's wild. So did you end up losing any meat, or were you able to like preserve all of it or most of it?
I smoked the moose and kept about 10 pounds or 15 pounds of it fresh that I could use it until that bit spoiled, just use it fresh until that spoiled. And eventually a bit of that did spoil on me, but we're talking like between 5 and 10 pounds probably, you know. So I smoked the moose, but that I the little portion that I kept fresh, I used it until it went bad.
Yeah, and
Then
I
I used it
mean,
for fish bait, so it wasn't lost.
yeah, and most alone viewers will have no concept of the amount of like work and meat that is. Like, I've never even
Oh,
killed a
dude.
moose. I've packed out two elk, and it's insane. And elk are significantly smaller than moose. I think a lot of my listeners are more familiar with big game, so they'll understand. But you guys should go back and watch the season. It was a really good season. But
Yeah, it
is
was a
there?
lot of meat, a lot of weight, and a lot of work.
Yeah. Is there anything that you were hoping had would come out through the season that didn't?
There are a couple of things. There was a fish that was just seemed like a miracle to me. Like I got this fish back because I was like standing there praying. I turned on the camera and I was like praying, God, I'd really like to have that fish back. And then the stringer that it had got away on just surfaced in the water right in front of me.
Oh my
And
gosh.
it was like a miracle from the Old Testament. I was like, ah, and I talked about that. I jumped on it, but they showed me getting the fish back, but I wish the prayer got on there. It was so cool.
I remember that
And
when you
then,
lost that huge fish and then you like got it
yeah.
back. I was like, that's crazy.
Oh, the there's a prayer 10 seconds before getting that fish back right on
Oh wow.
camera, you know, and I wish that had come through a bit, you know. And then in the end, I had some fish that I wanted to raise awareness for a certain thing, and they had to edit out some of it. I talked about children in Afghanistan and in Burma who are starving to death at that time, you know, and I'm like, I know I can't pray this fish to them, but maybe you can do something. And I talked about that a little bit, and they had to cut all that out and just be like, oh, something about child hunger. And it seemed I got a lot of flack from some of my closest friends. They're like, you had lost your mind, that was so stupid, you know. And they talked about that, and it did look pretty flaky, but it's a lot because of how it had to be chopped up, you know. And so there are a couple things on the season I wish had come through a little bit more. There are a couple other real wild man moments that I wish had been through, but there's just not enough time for them to put it all on screen. Things that were just fun and wild, you know, and that, you know, that were it's just me, you know. Other skits maybe, or other hunting moments, you know, things that were just totally wild. But you know, they're limited on time on what they can all fit in.
I guess, was there one major lesson or thing you heard from God that you came out of that experience with?
One very major thing. You know, I slipped back in the last few years to the mentality that I grew up with, that unless you're working really, really hard, I mean, this is subliminal, like, you don't deserve to be a human, to breathe the air, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And that's been a baseline for me for a long time. And I kind of slipped back into that about the effort of trying to earn your place in this world, or to deserve to be a human being. And it's easy to get that way when you're around death a lot, because you're like, well, why am I alive? This person right beside me is dead. And why do I get to live? And it's unfair. It seems unfair. And I guess I could describe it maybe as a little bit of survivor's guilt. And that was what God talked to me about when I started tra when it transitioned into being fun for me out there. I was sitting on a log taking a dump, actually, and this moose walks right in front of me, this small bull moose. And it was gorgeous. It was foggy. There were like loons on the lake right behind the moose, and it was fog, and it was like a painting, you know. It was just perfect, and a little light drizzle. It was so North Country. And I sat there on the log and I was admiring that moose, and then it struck me, that moose doesn't have to do anything besides be what he is, what it was created to be. And God looks down, and he must be happier than I even am seeing that thing, because he made it, fashioned it with his hand, and it just must he must take joy. If I take joy in that moose just being him, you know, God must take greater joy having made it to do that. And it doesn't have to impress him. It can only honor him by being what it is. And then it struck me like a bolt of lightning that that's me too. I'm a creature, nothing more than a creature made by God, you know? And And if that's the case, then he looks down and he's already happy that he made me, you
Yeah.
know. And I hope that a lot of people could really let this soak in somewhere in the wilderness. Go take this thought out into the wilderness and just let it soak into you that there's not one thing you can do in your life to make yourself stand an inch taller or shorter before God. He made you, and he made you with intention to be you. You might think that you're not enough. I mean, you might think that you're ugly, you know, like me, you know, or that you've not generated enough good. Instead, just turn to God and be like, man, I'm happy that I'm your creature. And I did that in the Arctic there, and it was the reset button. That was the reset button for me. That started everything good over again, and life sprang up from that thought that God would fashion me with his hand and that I can't earn that.
Yeah.
He just gave it to me to be me. And that's when I started just being a wild man in the Arctic, because I'm like, I am that. I'll be the best me that I can be. If God will give me breath, I'll be the best me that I can be. And I think that that'll honor him in some way, you
Yeah.
know? So
That's
anyways,
awesome, man.
that was the reset button for me, bro. After
Yeah.
all the stress of like death and war zones and stuff like that was the
Yeah.
turning point.
Well, it sounds like you came out with something more valuable than the cash prize.
You know, I talk about this sometimes. I'm like, I have hard days when I'm like, yes, I could have stayed out there and gone stroke for stroke with William and been like, we'll be here all winter, bro. And we would have been, you know, he was happy, I was happy, we'd have been there all winter. But I came to the point that it's like, don't go for that. Take this that I've given you and seal that in, you know, and that's what I came home with.
Okay, guys, let's talk about shelters for 1 second. Seek Outside has been making hot tents and stoves since 2010, right there in Grand Junction, Colorado. And I've been using Seek Outside products for about 4 or 5 years now. And the newest one I just added to my lineup is the Courthouse. Now, you guys already know that Seek Outside is famous for their teepees, but the Courthouse is a wall tent, and it's the lightest wall tent on the market and one of the quickest and easiest to set up. So it's great for mobile base camps, or even if you just want to go camping with friends or family. But if you guys go to Seek Outside and use the code QUEST, you're going to save 10% on your next order and get the best shelter on the market for a lightweight mobile base camp or a backcountry rip. So check it out and use that code QUEST. Guys, if you've been watching my YouTube channel at all this year, you'll notice I've been using some products from MDT. Now, MDT is a company that makes all kinds of accessories for your rifle to really increase your accuracy and make you a better shooter. Anything from chassis to rings and bases to muzzle brakes, and they make a bunch of incredible bipods. The one I ran all last season and still am running is the MDT SkyPod. Now, they're also coming out with a backcountry bipod that's going to be available this spring of 2025. So check them out at MDTTAC. That's MDTTAC.com. And if you want to upgrade your rifle, that's the place to start. That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
So what does life look like now for you? Like, and I mean, like, holistically, from career-wise to training-wise to spiritual practices, like what is life like for you right now?
You know, one thing that's new since the show is that something I started on like day 30, 35, around there on the show, I started waking up and just being grateful to God first thing. I'd tell like, God, you've fed me already for today. I had more food than anybody's ever had in the history of the show, and I was glad for it. And I was like, I want to wake up every morning and thank you that I can breathe and that I can live here and that I can do this. And you know what? After I got back from the show, I thought that was one of the best things in my life. So since then, I just wake up every morning, and I try to let the first words out of my mouth, I look up to the sky and say something like, bless the Lord, oh my soul, you know, or something thankful like that. And then talk about that a little bit. And it centers me, you know, it helps me to face stuff better. 'Cause then after getting back, I rushed right back overseas, you know, 'cause I felt ready again,
Yeah.
you know, back to some place where, where I felt like I could be useful, you know. But, so I'm still going on missions sometimes. You know, I was down in the not just overseas in the North Carolina floods and stuff like that. I went with a lot of my Marine buddies and we went down there and did what we could do. I enjoy that, but paying for it is so difficult because I'm not one of the people I didn't want the online thing to be true where they like, hey, you get paid to be a Christian. I'm like, no, I earn my money like you do, so it's hard to pay for going overseas and stuff like this. So what I do is I'm trying to market hunts, big game hunts in places that I know of in Asia that are hard for people to get to, but I can help them get to there easily because I have the experience. I have contacts there. Sometimes I have government contacts there, sometimes warlords, and either way, I have the way through. So I market big game hunts in Tajikistan, and I'm starting to market them in Iran this coming year.
Oh, wow.
And these are places that are hard for hunters to reach and to have somebody that they can rely on, that they know it's gonna they can control some of the choices and it's gonna be good for them. And so that's kind of a niche I'm trying to push to help me just get through in life and to hopefully have enough to continue to pay for going on some of these rescue missions and other things. So career-wise, that's where we're at right there.
Wow. Okay, so I want to ask you how hunting, relates into your life, and if you do that recreationally, and kind of talk about that too. But I feel like this is kind of a God-ordained conversation right now because I've literally been struggling with, because like I said, international missions is such a huge passion of mine, that and hunting,
Yeah.
struggling with how do I, and I try to use my platform to glorify God,
Yeah.
but how do I, in a more real, more tangible, more impactful way, combine these two passions. And it's hard when you're, going overseas and you're trying to produce a television show. A lot goes into that, and it's like, and I'm already gone for 2 weeks. How do I squeeze that in with some kind of missions work or something? So I've been really trying to think and pray and figure out how do I combine these two. So, dude. I mean, we should pray on it. Maybe we collaborate on a hunt slash aid trip, missions trip or something sometime, Like that would be amazing.
I'm big on that idea, man. Please chat with me, after the podcast wraps up and
Yeah.
stuff like that. Just stay in touch with me because you're thinking just along the lines of what I'm thinking about. And I'm also adding I'm doing another thing too, which I put to you and to all the listeners as well. I'm gonna start hosting some discipleship focused survival and bushcraft camps here in the States,
Oh, cool.
nationwide. Travel different places for it. But I have a particular thing in mind. I speak to a lot of veterans who have a lot of issues with the I possibly PTSD trauma, the past things, just experiences, and being at a point in life, where you want so desperately to have that moment where you grow a notch past, how some of those things have like weighed you down. And I'm trying to host two of those this year specifically for that. It doesn't just have to be veterans. Anybody who's been through particularly serious trauma, I'm going to host two camps this year and invite anybody who is in that shape. And I don't think I'll charge a single thing. I just want people to be there with me, be in the woods. We're going to talk about God for sure. You got to know that straight up. And that's a way in which I'm tying in kind of my skill set, my person that I am, with hopefully glorifying God in some way, and I hang out with veterans really well. If you're a veteran and you come and hang out with me in the woods, you're gonna be happier than you think you've been in a while because we're gonna have a lot of similar experiences. We're gonna have a lot similar mentality, but we're gonna talk about healing. We're gonna talk about God and stuff like that. So I'm trying to push towards that a bit this year. And if there's anybody out there, if you know folks that you're like, look, let's get to get you send them you send them my way, bro.
Yeah, for sure. I also really have a lot of veteran buddies and connect well with those guys too. And
Yeah.
I think there's definitely like potential for us to maybe link up and do something in the future, man. That'd be really cool. We'll stay in touch. And
Absolutely, man.
so yeah, man. This has been really cool. I always, I'm so busy trying to finish production on this season three and get everything done. I got three kids as well, and so like sometimes it's hard to schedule a time to sit down and do a podcast, with everything I got going on. But like almost every time, like I come out thinking like I'm really glad I had this conversation, and I'm really glad we connected, man. I do think there's definitely potential to link up with something in the future, but so anyway, but where can folks find you if they want to look into some of this stuff or see what you got going on, that kind of thing?
Okay, thanks. Yeah, my website is timberclegghorn.com. And just everybody can like probably start through there. I've got a few things listed on there that are under construction, like some of the mission work overseas. It's always changing, so that's not always listed, but everybody can get a hold of me through my website and through my social media, Timber Cleghorn, Facebook. On Facebook, you got to be aware of a couple of fakes that are out there, but you'll find me. And also on Amazon. If people want to hear more about my story, my childhood and things like this, you get my book on Amazon. It's called Memoir of a Wild Man by Timber Cleghorn.
Nice, man. Well, cool, dude. Is there anything else you wanted to say to close her out?
I just want to thank you. And I've enjoyed so much getting to catch up with you on this podcast. I think we have a lot of similar mentality, similar life values,
For sure.
and look forward to the next time we can either cross paths in person or, talk about some mission or the
Let's
other.
do something, man. Let's do an
Yeah.
episode bringing just for me in my life, it'd be awesome and cool content, but also bring some awareness of, how hunters can get more involved in aid work and missions work.
Yeah.
Because
Yeah.
it's always great going overseas and learning new cultures and connecting with people. Sometimes you feel like, and I do know that hunting is conservation and it helps these folks out with jobs and stuff like that, speaking about the guides and the different operations and stuff, but to be able to take it to that next level and not just be like another American going over to shoot an animal, like ha
Yeah.
doing something with some eternal purpose, or like I said, even just do one small thing for one person that might help them out or show them the light of Jesus, is awesome. So
Spot on, man. I've got a couple of sheep hunters come to Tajikistan with me this winter, and they're very interested in they're dedicated Christians as well. And they're like, "Hey, we're gonna meet anybody along the way that you've spoken to about Jesus before." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, we're gonna stop in villages where I just on our widows project this spring. I've just prayed with a lot of families in their homes and helped widows start their micro businesses to help their family and
Nice.
spoken to them about Jesus a lot." And the guys are really excited. And I think there's other guys out there who would feel the same way. So
100%.
definitely, let's talk more on that topic right
Yeah,
there.
let's think on it and pray on it and stay in touch and think about how we could do that. But well, awesome, man. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it too. Thanks for carving out some time and I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Thanks, man. Good to meet you, and God bless you and your family. And until we talk next time.
Yeah, you too, brother.